You're listening to WMRW LP Warren 95.1 FM, and the following program represents the opinions of the producer and participants and does not represent the views of WMRW LP or its license holder Roots Work. So our topic this evening is population, and I came across this gentleman, Mr. Jason C. Brent, and he had written a piece on population, and I found it very interesting, so I thought he would be an excellent guest to come and talk to you about population, because I do it all the time, and I figured it would be good to hear someone from somewhere else talking about it. So, Mr. Brent, thank you very much for coming on the show. And if you could just give us, like, a brief synopsis of, like, how you grew up, what your family was like, the occupation you chose, and then how you got interested in population.
Well, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. I came from an upper-middle-class family. Both my parents were attorneys. I was interested. I have all degrees in engineering. I have a degree in engineering. I have a degree in business and accounting and a degree in law. Professionally, I've worked on guided missiles as an engineer. I became a certified public accountant both in New York and California. And I became an attorney in both New York and California, and eventually wound up being a municipal court judge in California in an area called Kern County, which is just due north of Los Angeles. I'm now retired, and I'm working on writing a book on population. I became interested in population more than 50 years ago. I'm an old man pushing 76, and I realized that we're going to have a major problem if population continues to grow. It's a basic thesis of mine and of many intelligent people that you cannot have continual growth on a finite earth. No matter what you do, eventually population growth must cease. And I'll go on for a second. Population and the economy grow in a compound manner, geometric manner, exponential manner, all the same thing. And the population were to grow at 1% a year, it would double in about 70 years, be four times as large in 140 years, and eight times as large as 210 years. And that cannot happen. I don't care what anyone says about the world. You cannot have a population eight times as large as we currently have today in 210 years. And similarly, if the economy grows of the United States at 2.5% or, say, 3%, it doubles approximately every 23 years. So in 23 years, the economy of the U.S. is twice as large, in 46 years, four times as large, et cetera. And that is not going to happen. So we have to realize that humanity will have to change every aspect of society, morality, justice, concept of what's right and what's wrong, charity, government. Because growth will stop. Environmentalism, new technologies, anything we do will not permit growth to continue on the planet Earth. It just cannot happen. Without going into long detail, that's the basic thesis. We have a planet Earth, and we cannot ship people out to extraterrestrial planets for rules of math. It won't happen. So we are bound on this Earth. If we want to survive on this earth, we have to realize growth will cease. And we also have to realize that almost every one of the resources that permit our industrial society to function are non-renewable. You're going to run out of water for irrigation. You're going to run out of oil. You're going to run out of zinc, antimony, lead, rubidium, et cetera, of all the materials. And we have to come to the conclusion that not only will population will cease, but it's going to contract, and that's going to change everything about society.
Exactly. So why do you think the average person doesn't really think about population versus resources? I mean, they tend to always think that they're always going to be there. You know, they hear that there's peak oil and resources are depleting, yet people keep going on like it's, I guess, a right to populate. It's the one thing you can do, but they don't seem to be thinking about what's going on around. How do you feel that disconnect?
I'll answer that for two reasons. One, it's very hard to grasp, and we've been brought up, particularly in the U.S., with an ever-growing society. I'll be 76, and in my generation, everything is growing. More food, more gadgets, bigger homes, more cars, more oil, etc. And suddenly to realize that cannot continue is tremendously difficult. Also religion, and I very honestly don't like religion, and that may insult your listeners, but religion demands more children, more power, whether it be the Catholics, the Jews, the Orthodox Jews have as many kids as the Catholics, the Mormons, the followers of Islam, etc. Also, to realize that when population stops growth or economic growth ceases and starts to contract, every aspect of our society will change. What is moral? What is ethical? What is just? What is functional government? People don't want to face that. And also, who goes first? If you have three kids and I have one kid, or I have no kids, so what? Your three will drive me out. It's who goes first. It's something that a fellow named Garrett Hardin called the problem of the commons. When everyone is responsible for something, no one's responsible for it. If you have an acre of ground and five different farmers are going to let the cattle run loose and eat that ground, eat the grass on the ground, each one wants to make the most money, each one wants the most cattle to run on it, and eventually there'll be no more grass left, the cattle destroy the ground, which provides food. The same thing with the fisheries in the earth right now. The fisheries throughout the world are being depleted by massive catches by huge modern trawlers, dragging nets miles long, and no one's there to watch it. It's everybody's there to watch it, and yet no one's there to watch it. So this is why people are frightened of it. And a lot of people don't have the intelligence. Also, they're worried about today's problem, where they put food on the table for their children. They lose a job. So there are vast reasons for that. And also, the requirements are so offensive to people. One of the requirements is I believe we have to have coercive population control in a manner similar to China, because we're not going to control population without that, in my opinion. And it's very difficult for our people and anyone to grasp the idea that the government says you can have one kid and one kid only, or no kids. It's also, as I said, religion. I'm talking at great length, but I'll explain it. If population growth continues, we're going to be in disaster. We can't support 20 billion people on the earth, 30 billion, 40 billion, you pick a number. Cannot continue. It will not continue. And there are only two times that population growth can cease. Before birth, by artificial birth control and abortion, or after birth, by a war, death, rape, murder, pillage, whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Before birth, it stops, as I said before, by abortion and artificial birth control. No nation on the face of the earth has really controlled its population without abortion. And is religion going to accept abortion? A lot of birth control methods fail and not used properly. There are 70 or 80 million abortions throughout the world. Roughly 40 or 50% of all pregnancies are not planned or desired. And you need abortion. Will the Orthodox Jews, the Catholics, the Southern Baptists, etc., accept abortion? And again, going to be very direct, and I don't play games since I have the opportunity to talk to your listeners, is we have a choice. The Catholics and the Pope's opposed to abortion for abortion murder. I don't agree it's murder.
Right.
But I use their words. Abortion is murder, indeed, according to them. We have a choice, my dear friend and my dear listeners. When do we murder people? Either murder them before birth by abortion and artificial birth control, or we murder them after birth when the population hits 10 billion, 20 billion, 30 billion, 50 billion. We will murder people, and it's very difficult to grasp that idea. But I repeat myself, we will murder billions of people. If we cannot help it, it will occur. And repeat myself, either before birth by abortion and artificial birth control, or after birth by war, rape, murder, pillage, disease, fighting over resources, killing for a slice of bread. That's the problem.
Yeah, and you'd think people would start seeing it with all the processed foods that are coming, and basically the farm fish, which people don't realize how toxic farming fish is for the oceans and how unhealthy it is. But those, to me, are some of the first signs that there's a problem with too much population because you're having trouble feeding the population. And basically the oceans are dying. Like, I'm a chef for a living, and so I've noticed fish for over 25 years, and haddock, which is one of the mainstays of people's diets, it used to be a fish was probably 6 feet long, you know, and the fillets were giant. Now the fillets are almost the size of a trout, a little bigger, but really small, you know, and people don't really take that into account because they never see it, you know, and they just think that everything's going to be fine and everything's going to be okay. And as far as religion goes, maybe sometimes I think, you know, they've taken the fruitful thing too far. But at the same time, sometimes with the fundamentalist Christians that are trying to bring Jesus back to earth and think that God is going to take care of everything by having more children, you put the world into a stressful situation. Not that I think they think that hard, I guess, but you use all the resources and then there's no place to go. And then people think they think technology is going to save us, and that doesn't work, and going to space to go to other planets. They don't want to take care of what they have. And dealing with what we have, it's a tough situation, but nobody wants to acknowledge it, I guess, is the problem I'm having. Because when
they don't want to acknowledge it. But
go ahead. Yeah, I mean, people don't want to
talk for a moment about going into space. Right now, our spaceships, our ships that carry stuff to the space station roughly do 18,600 miles an hour. Repeat, 18,600 miles an hour. To reach just 10% of the speed of light, it would have to increase by a factor of 3,600, because there are 60 minutes in an hour, 60 seconds in a minute. So just to reach 18,600 miles per second, which is 10% of the speed of light, we first have to have our spaceships increase its speed by a factor of 3,600. Then, at 10% of the speed of light, we'll take us, for example, the most recent planet came up yesterday that's in the Goldilocks zone, they call it, it's 600 light years away. To get to that planet, the speed of light would take 10 times 600 is 6,000 years. There is no way we can send a spaceship for 6,000 years to a planet 600 light years away. 600 light years is our next door neighbor. It's closer than you and I are.
Right.
Our galaxy, the Milky Way, is 100,000 light years across. We are in the spiral arm far from the center. And a star with a planet 600 light years away is very, very close, and yet it'll take 6,000 years at 10% of the speed of light to get there. We can't do that. So that's another reason people don't realize that the increase in food that we've been having the last 50 years is in large part due to irrigation, and yet we are drawing down the aquifers, the waters under the ground, which provide irrigation, and these are what they call fossil aquifers that take thousands and millions of years to recharge, to refill, and we are drawing them down faster, substantially faster, much, much faster than they're refilling, and when the aquifers go out, there'll be no food, particularly the Ogallala Aquifer under the Midwest, the aquifer under the North China area, where their wheat growing area is, the aquifer under Saudi Arabia has gone dry already. And when the Ogallala Aquifer under the Midwest goes dry, we're in trouble. The U.S. will not be able to provide food for us. So it's very, very difficult. People don't realize, and I'm not discussing peak oil.
Right.
I'm discussing just water. We cannot desalinate water. There's not enough power to desalinate and pump the Pacific Ocean 1,000 miles or 1,500 miles to the Midwest, to the corn-growing areas and food-growing areas of the Midwest of the United States. And once we're out of water, we're in deep doo-doo.
And basically, and then the salination, I mean, all the waste that comes from that, it's just overwhelming. I mean, I would guess that most people really don't even know what a billion is, because when you talk going into space, how far that is, I think most people's minds can't fathom it. So that's like when they say the population is going to 7 billion, people are like, oh, maybe that's not so bad. You know, and
that's true.
You know, and as I'm talking to you, that's what I'm sort of thinking, because it's like, to me, a billion to me is unfathomable, you know, let alone get into trillions and et cetera like that. And I think maybe that's one of the main problems.
Well, also, people don't realize one, the math, that the compound growth grows so fast, nothing can overpower it. And I'll give you another example. If your great-great-grandfather invested in 1 cent, repeat, 1 cent, repeat, 1 cent in a bank the day Jesus was born, and that bank paid 4% interest, in 1950, you would have 1.6 followed by 33 zeros worth of money. 1.6, and write down 33 zeros after that. That's how much money you have through the compound growth. But we don't understand that. We don't comprehend it. Also, people say, they look across the Midwest, the United States, and see all the open land for Texas. And people have written, Mr. Brent, you're wrong. You're an idiot, Mr. Brent. Everyone on the earth can fit in the land of Texas, in the state of Texas, and not be as crowded as the people in New York City. So therefore, Mr. Brent, you're an idiot. Well, of course, everyone can sit, live in Texas, but they don't can't get the resources to take care of them. Where do you live and how many people can squeeze in the state of Texas is really important. Where do they get the food? Where do they get the water? Where do they get the clothing? Where do they get the steel to have buildings in? Where do they get the electricity to function? So when someone says that everyone can fit in the state of Texas, they don't understand the problem. They look at land and say, yeah, I can put people there. But that's not going to work. Where do they get the food from? You can't have everyone living in Texas and getting food. You can't have everyone living in Texas and getting electricity, et cetera.
Right.
So that's the problem. And it still doesn't relate to the problem of using up non-renewable resources. As I said, lead, antimony, zinc, and the rare earth minerals, the platinum platinum group of minerals, and iron ore. Forget about oil. I'm not discussing oil. And I'm not discussing global warming, which I think occurs, but I don't want to get into a debate about that.
Right, right.
You can't get into a debate that we're using non-renewable resources. And a good friend of mine, a fellow named Bush Clugston, analyzed 89 of the resources that make industrial society function. And he pointed out that the U.S. imports a vast portion of those minerals, particularly from countries that are not too friendly from us. And without those minerals, our society would collapse. And he points out that throughout the world, there's a very substantial those minerals and resources are being depleted and used and are scarce. And once they're used, you cannot replace them. As I say, recycling will not work.
No.
For mathematical reasons, new technologies will not work. And I'll give you an example. Right now, everyone wants to increase the miles per gallon of gas that the car gets. And the government is fostering that, and everyone wants higher gas mileage. Great, great idea. But now you have a higher gas mileage. Two things can happen. You can drive the same number of miles, or you can drive less miles and save money. A combination of them doesn't affect what I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm.
If you drive less miles and save money, what do you do with the money? Save $500 a year. You can, one, have another child, because now you can afford another child, and that child, over its lifetime, will use more resources, oil, food, water, et cetera, than you save by increasing the miles per gallon of gas. Or you can spend something with it. You can buy a shirt. Now you need a new factory to make the shirt. You need to grow cotton to grow the shirt. You need a store to sell the shirt. You need heat to heat the store to sell the shirt. You need a truck to haul the cotton from the land or where it's grown to the factory. You need sewing machines to make the shirt. You need electricity to run the sewing machines, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the end result is if everyone saved a lot of money and spent it to buy shirts, in the long run, you'd use more resources than the savings in miles per gallon of gas. You can then take the $500 you save by driving the same number of miles and put it in the bank. Ah, great idea, except the bank doesn't keep the money there. The bank has to lend the money out to somebody, but they have to pay you interest. Now, that somebody who borrows the money from the bank is going to build a factory to make widgets, to make cars. And again, that new factory to make widgets of cars or light bulbs or computers or whatever is going to use a lot of resources. Have to build the factory. You need employees to work the factory. You have to drive to the factory, on and on and on. So therefore, if you drive less miles and save the money, in the long run, and in the short run, you're going to use more resources overall than what you save by increasing the miles per gallon of gas. In the alternative, you can drive the same number of miles, whereas it's cheaper to drive, not save any money. But doing that, you can use up more resources. You're going to wear out the road sooner. You're going to wear out your car sooner. You're going to use more tires. You're going to have more servicing on the car. You put more waste disposal. You're going to pump out more CO2 into the oxygen, et cetera. So raising the miles per gallon of gas is a fool's dream. And the U.S. Congress and everyone says, let's raise miles per gallon of gas. Great, but very stupid idea. It's not going to save anything in your overall resources. Now, I'm insulting everybody, and really, I don't care. But that's what's going to happen. Increasing the miles per gallon of gas is not going to do a damn thing for the environment and the survival of humanity.
Well, exactly. Well, it's good to hear you say this, because now I don't feel like I'm alone. But, yeah, that's why I always say keep the gas prices expensive, which, yes, someone's going to make money, but it's the only thing that makes people not use their vehicles. When the gas went up really expensive, people were driving less. It goes down, they start driving more. Instead of keeping the good habits and thinking about the environment, it's all a cost thing. And
well, but the point, even if they drive less and think about the environment, if they save the money, they're going to spend it, as I pointed out, by buying a shirt. Or having another child.
Oh, exactly.
So driving less is not going to be beneficial to the society.
Well, it's the whole...
That's what it's
consumption. It basically comes down to consumption. I mean, people start with the fuel going, oh, look, I'll save the environment by not driving, but then you do have the money and you do spend it, or you do decide to have a child. And the whole thing basically comes down to consumption, plus having the population for sure, but it's like, it's consuming, and people really don't think of the ramifications of that candy bar they bought.
Well, everyone thinks of consumption, but no matter what you do in consumption, it's always offset by population growth. Population growth can go very large, double, four times, eight times. If you consume, you drop your consumption by 50%, but population doubles, you're back where you started from. Consumption can only go down so much. That's a fallacy. Everyone attacks consumption. And yes, we shouldn't overconsume. I'm not saying we should overconsume.
Right.
But you can drop consumption up to a point. So instead of buying four shirts, you buy two shirts. But if you have eight kids, it makes no difference how many shirts you buy. Consumption is a nice savings idea, but it's really a waste of time and effort to attack consumption.
Right.
You have to attack children. Not having children, and I go back to religious fanaticism. One of our justices of the Supreme Court, Mr. Antonin Scalia, has nine kids.
Right.
And if each of those had nine, in under 400 years, it'd be 31 billion Scalias running around. Repeat, 31 billion Scalias in under 400 years. If each of those had nine, and the next generation, each of those had nine, in under 400 years, it'd be 31 billion with a B, Scalia's running around. So to me, consumption is a waste of time to even discuss it. You have to stop population growth, and you have to cut that down. And not only have to stop growth, we have to rapidly reduce population today and rapid population decline. That's a horrible thing to say, but that's really a fact of life.
Well, it's reality, basically. And I mean, I can't disagree with you at all. I mean, because I'm trying to, but it's not working because I agree with you so much. I'm trying to be a little different. But
yeah.
You're...
I mean, I'm trying to be direct. I don't want to play games. Like I said before, we will murder people no matter what we do.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
To murder them before birth or after birth. And again, I'm using the word murder because that's what the Catholic Church and those opposed to abortion call it.
Right.
I don't equate it with murder. Well, and I don't like the idea of abortion, don't get me wrong.
I'm not at all.
I'm in favor of artificial birth control,
right.
But
thinking first.
Artificial birth control fails and people don't use it correctly. That's the problem. And we got to face it head on. We have to face it that no matter what we do, resources are finite, the earth is finite. And that's the problem. And math tells us that. There's a professor emeritus at the University of Colorado, Al Bartlett, who was a professor of physics, who pointed this out some years ago, a mathematics rule, in effect. He's one of the founders of our movement, if you call it a movement. He's a brilliant guy. And so we have this problem. We have to face it, and we have to change every aspect of society. And I'm going to touch on very, very difficult, horrible ideas. What do we do now with old people? And I'm going to be 76.
Mm-hmm.
We had President Ronald Reagan with Alzheimer's disease. How long do we keep him alive? We can't afford it.
No, we can't.
I don't mean dollars. Medical science now permits us to keep old people alive. Can we keep 10 million Ronald Reagans alive?
No.
Needing round-the-clock medicine. What do we do in morality? And I'm not in favor of murder. I'm just talking about morality. Science has permitted us to keep old people alive who would have died years ago, a la Ronald Reagan. Or me coming up shortly, wouldn't you know?
Well, your number's up, your number's up.
Yeah, but what do you do? But you keep in mind, how much resources can we allocate to keeping old people alive?
Well, the whole thing is quality of life. To me, if someone has Alzheimer's or a debilitating disease, no matter how old you are, and they're going to have to be taken care of the rest of their life, their quality of life isn't really going to be that good. And the main reason they're being kept alive is because people are afraid of death. You know, everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. So that becomes a main problem. And
that's true, but also morality, 100 years ago, we had lots of death, and our morality required us to keep people alive. Now our morality has to change, and that means morality is not engraved in stone. If morality is not engraved in stone, then religion has a great deal of problem because there's no eternal verities, no eternal truths, no eternal concepts of morality. Morality becomes situational ethics, and that will destroy religion.
Well,
if morality is not God-given and becomes situational, then what does religion do?
Right. Well, it's a preserving of life. But then if you look at Native American and Eskimos, you get too old, you're put out on an ice floe, you know, and the elder usually doesn't have a problem. And the same with Native Americans, they're traveling back and forth, the elder can't make it. They know that they're a burden, and they know it's not worth bringing them along. You know, where
like James Michener, the famous author, wrote a book about South Africa. And the first few pages of that book just covered that point. A tribe of Bushmen was migrating, and the leader was injured, and they had to leave him. And was their morality any worse than our morality? Our morality is different. It requires a change in our morality. And that requires a change in religion because there's no eternal verities. There's no eternal truths. There's no God-given morality. And that is overthrows half of our civilization. So these are all problems wrapped up in overpopulation. And how do you solve them? It requires a great deal of thinking, a great deal of revolution. It means throwing out almost everything we know to be true. It's not true. It's not merely population that is forcing the issue. That's forcing us to think. But it requires a complete change in our concepts of morality. It requires a complete change of what the purpose of religion is. There's no eternal, repeating myself, no eternal verities, no eternal truth, nothing eternal. Where does religion come in?
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, so have you thought of, like, hypothetical ideas that could be proposed by governments or ideas of how to get people to understand controlling growth? I mean, what kind of ideas you think will be coming down the pike, you think?
Well, I've written a book on it, which I can't get published because it's too pessimistic. I've written some essays which break up what I told you into small parts. If any of your listeners want me to send them an essay, I'll be happy to do that. I'll give you my email address. Or if you list, the email address is letter J and Brent, E-R-E-N-T. 6179@AOL.com. Anyone who wants to attack me, as long as the attacks are intelligent and wants to prove me wrong, I'd love to have people attack me or prove me wrong, but don't just say you're an idiot and use dirty words and hang up.
Right,
right. That's a logical reason why I'm wrong. Please attack me. I beg you to attack me. Or if you want to debate, discuss, I'll be happy to send you my ideas and essays, and again, the letter J, then Brent, B-R-E-N-T, 6179@AOL.com. I don't know if we have enough time. Time is thundering on us. The latest UN numbers, estimates, and they're all estimates. No one can predict the future. The best, well, let's back up. UN issues estimates in 8 different ways, but the most quoted, most useful estimate issued by the UN is the median projection. There are 8 different projections. According to the latest one, came out just a few months ago, the UN estimates that population will reach 9.3 billion by 2050 and 10.1 billion by 2100 and still be growing. And that takes into account the fact of AIDS and other diseases killing people. That takes into account that some nations, Europe particularly, do not have enough people born to reach replacement levels. Some of the nations are having decreasing populations, particularly Russia. Strangely enough, Spain is very population conscious, Italy, strangely enough. But overall, repeat, on a worldwide basis, the best estimate of the UN is 9.3 billion and 2050 and 10.1 billion in 2100. So that's the problem. How are we going to solve the problem? It requires a remake of every aspect of society, going back to keep all people alive. Does society have the right to limit the number of children you have? And that concept of society limiting how many kids you can have is, to me, very simple. There's no human right that is not controlled by society. There's no absolute human right. Your right to life is not absolute. If you commit murder, the state, society, has a right to execute you. If you don't have the right to walk the streets as a free person, if you commit a crime, society has the right to put you in jail and prison. There's not one right that I am aware of that I could research that is absolute to humanity. It's not one human absolute right. Why do people put on a pedestal the right to have how many children you want and say society cannot control that right by coercion, a la the Chinese? If you go to the U.S. Congress and say we should have a constitutional amendment where you could go anyone in jail as more than one child, they'd take you out of the floor of Congress and shoot you for stupidity. But that's the realistic world. There's not one right that I can think of, and I beg anyone to think of another right that's absolutely not controlled by society.
Well,
and again, going back to politics, the Republicans are advocating, in effect, wiping out the right to abortion in the U.S. by severely limiting it. The Tea Party is against it. The Republican Party is against it. They don't want to even permit money from the U.S. to go to any organization around the world that even discusses abortion. Clinics that provide vital medical attention for women and provide advice about birth control, and in some cases even mention abortion, the U.S. won't fund it. So the idea of solving this problem is beyond my ability to predict. It won't happen. Can we remake the Congress of the United States where it advocate abortion? Ha, ha, ha. It's not going to happen. And so how will we solve the problem? Not going to be solved. Billions will die, and if you want to have some fun, read Josephus, the Jewish historian who was with Titus, Roman Emperor Titus, when he conquered Jerusalem. And Josephus records the horrors that occurred inside Jerusalem when the people ran out of food due to the Roman general Titus surrounding it, laying siege to Jerusalem. Mothers killing their children, roasting them and eating them. That's going to happen us worldwide if we don't control population. Mothers will kill their children, roast them, and eat them. Now, can I be more nasty than that? No, that's the fact. Read your history, go to Josephus. We'll go to the 900 days by Harrison Salisbury, who analyzed the siege of Leningrad in World War II by Hitler's troops. The horrors when civilization, when people run out of food and starving to death, mental breakdowns occur and things happen. And that's going to happen to us, and population will decrease precipitously, violently, and billions will die. That's the choice we have.
Right. His history will repeat itself, but on a bigger scale. And basically, giving birth to most people is the last right that is not regulated. And that's why I think it's so out of control, because you have to get a dog license, you have to get a car license, you have to get all this stuff. But for some people, they feel that giving birth is something that they have total control. My body, I can do what I want. I can have as many children as I want because it isn't regulated. And when China started regulating, everyone, you know, gave them crap, basically. And their population is still going up somewhat out of control. But if they wouldn't have done that, it would even be worse, you know. And it's just, I don't know, people don't get it. And then the idea of capitalism is basically based on growth, you know, exponential growth, because then it grows. But then they don't talk about the resources. They don't talk about environment, your way of life. And it's just, it's like a theory, but people don't think of the ramifications of that theory.
That's true. So a best estimate is that there would be 400 million additional Chinese living today if China didn't have the one child per family rule. And this is the answer. So everyone's afraid to touch it.
Everyone.
Population control. An example, I won't mention the professor's name. The professor was written on the subject of overpopulation. And he advocates decreasing population. But I mentioned to him, well, let's write a book about coercive population. You'd think I was the biggest murderer in the world, because he won't even join me in writing a book on the subject. And he's a professor emeritus who's retired. They can't do anything to him. And yet they're afraid to touch the subject. And, for example, Jeffrey Sachs was a professor at Columbia University and advisor to the UN General Secretary, has what they call Millennium Development Goals, but he won't touch population control. Joel Cohn, a professor at Columbia and Rockefeller University, who wrote the book How Many People There Can Support, will not touch coercive population control. Lester Brown of the Earth Policy Institute, a famous guy, has won more awards, the MacArthur Genius Award, will not touch coercive population control. Robert Engelman, head of World Watch, another environmental group, will not touch, of course, a population control. Your environmental groups, Sierra Club, none of them will discuss it.
Never.
Of course, a population control.
So do you feel
they
like...
They'll talk about, we'll save the environment by driving our cars less or getting more miles per gallon.
Won't work. No.
And again, the U.S. population is expected to grow from roughly 310 million today, or thereabouts, to 430 or 440 million by 2050.
Right.
What are you going to do in America? Forget about any place else. If you have that many more cars, that many more people, that much crowding from 310 to 430 to 440 million, when my grandchildren are alive, 40 years from now. And we talk about that. It's all related also to politics. Will we close our borders? And I don't want to make it chauvinistic. I don't want to limit it to the U.S.
No.
But if we were to close our borders and not let people in, maybe the countries that have excessive population would realize they have a duty to control it, whether it be Mexico, Latin America, or Muslim countries, or whatever. If you said you can't ship your excess population into the U.S. and you have to solve your problem locally, that would force them to think a little better and do it. Now, admittedly, population in some countries is decreasing. Still, as I mentioned before, overall population, the latest UN numbers, 9.3 billion in 2050, 10.1 billion in 2100, and still be growing. Also, people don't realize that the per capita usage of resources is going up. It's not merely population, but together with per capita uses of resources. Go to China and look at their booming economy.
Right.
And if you had the Chinese population using resources at the same level we do in the U.S., just beyond comprehension.
Yeah.
And the best guesstimate is that China will use more oil by 2030 than the entire world produces today. Repeat. Best guesstimate, estimate, planning, et cetera. Due to the amount of cars being bought in China and due to their expanding economy, they will require more oil in 20 years from now than the entire world produces today, around 80 million barrels a day. Now, what will humanity do if China takes all the oil, 80 million barrels? Can we double it or triple it? No, we can't. No way in Jose we're going to triple that oil production. What we do then? The best guesstimate is that China's in total, will reach or exceed the U.S. economic output by 2030. Right now, the U.S. uses between 25 and 30% of all the world's resources. Pick your number, 25 or 30%. If China equals us, between us, will be using 50 and 60% of all the world's resources. And leaving what for the rest of humanity? And the best guesstimate is by 2050, China's economy will be double ours.
Right.
Then if we use 25% and they use twice ours, 50%, there's a total of 75% of all the world's resources used by the U.S. and China by 2050. Aha. What's the world going to do? What is India going to do, whose population will surpass China by 2050? Because they don't have a one-child family problem or authorization. What will happen then? What will happen when China uses more oil in 2030 than the world produces today?
Yeah. Yeah. And so
here's
a question. So I'm thinking to myself, why do people not think about it? So you're 76 years old. You grew up basically in the Depression. You've seen a lot of technology. You've seen a lot of everything. So, and you said that you've been sort of thinking about it for 50 years about population. What were some of the things that made you start thinking about it when you were a youth? I mean, what were some of the first signs that you saw where you started going, population, You know.
Well, I was maybe going, I was walking home from the subway to my home in Queens, part of New York, the borough of Queens, and I passed over a freeway, a parkway, and I saw the huge amount of cars continually going, and I suddenly realized that oil is not infinite, that you can't have what I saw on that freeway, and I started a parkway. You call it a parkway in New York, we didn't call it a freeway. I realized that it couldn't happen. I rode the subway and saw people being jammed in. It couldn't happen. That made me think about it. Also, I was a young man in World War II. I was born in 1936. But I realized war, almost every war, has a resource component in it.
Yes.
While Hitler used it to exterminate Jews, there's also Lebensraum, living land. Lebensraum to the east was his thing. He wanted to conquer the east, the steppes of Russia,
yep.
The resources. And almost every war has a resource concept into it. And now we have atomic weapons. The best example is in World War II, the best guesstimate is between 60 and 90 million people were killed in World War II. World War II started in September 1st, 1939, and extended to August 1945. Excuse me. 6 years, 90 million people died. That's roughly 15 million a year. Right now, we're adding 80 million, between 77 and 80 million people a year. So killing 15 million people per year is no great catastrophe, and I'm not being funny when I say that, when you add 80 million people a year.
Not at all.
How can we do that, not face resource wars? We also have a vastly different thing. Atomic weapons, up until 1945, there were really no weapons of mass destruction. There's nothing that could equal our atomic weapons or nuclear weapons. And people don't realize one thing. The bombs that went off in Nagasaki and Hiroshima had the equivalent of between 12 and 20,000 tons of TNT. One bomb had the equivalent of 12,000 or 20,000 tons of TNT. The hydrogen devices, I'm not sure hydrogen bombs, but one hydrogen device was set off by Russia that had the equivalent of 57 million tons of TNT. Repeat, one nuclear device went off by Russia had the equivalent of 57 million tons of TNT. You know what that is? One, if that's a bomb, I'm not sure if that's a bomb, but the bombs have between 12 and 15 million tons equivalent of TNT. That I know. I don't know if it was a bomb having 57 million. But what's the difference between 12 and 15 million and 57 million tons of TNT?
Yeah.
If a bomb with 12 to 15 million tons of TNT was set off over New York, one bomb would kill, 12 million people, some ridiculous number like that. Billions will die in the next war. But also, we are using up resources that will not permit civilization to restart. After World War II, we still have plenty of resources. Cars came off the assembly line, our houses were built, planes were built to fly, oil went forward. After the next war, there'll be no resources. Civilization will not be able to restart itself. The English astronomer Fred Hoyle, H-O-Y-L-E, pointed this out 50, 60 years ago, that civilization has one shot and one shot only. If we lose that one shot, we will become, in effect, animals back again. There'll be no civilization because there'll be no iron, mm-hmm. no water to grow irrigation, no oil, etc., no steel. And that is a problem. We don't realize we have one shot, only one shot. We lose it, not only will billions will die, perhaps survivors will be 10 million out of 7 billion. That's my guess. I can't prove that. It's just a guess I'm making.
Right.
10 million out of 7 billion. But even if that money survived, there'd be no resources to permit them to restart civilization. No great telescopes. No great science, no understanding of nature, no great literature, no great art, no great music. Nothing except pure animalistic behavior.
Right, back to the dark
this
ages.
This is a problem. You have a far more difficult problem than that. We have one shot. We lose it, we're done.
So do you feel that's why, like a lot of the professors that write the papers on the population and understand what's going on, but do you think maybe they just feel that there is no hope and it's going to do what it's going to do because they don't want to take steps to control the population? Because in order to control the population, either there's going to have to be a massive plague, you know, or massive sterilization, you know, something to stop people from having children, because it's pretty obvious at this point that people are never going to stop. I mean, I know people that have five and six children, and it's like, you know, they're good kids, but it's just insane that... And then I'll talk to people, why did you have children? Like, how did you decide on the number? And they're like, I never really thought about it. You know, and it's
That's a problem that I've been struggling with myself, very much so. And I've been struggling with that. But yes, it's so difficult. People don't want to face it. In fact, I was talking to people, 2 days ago at a friend's house. And the answer was, human ingenuity will solve the problem. Just
right.
a bland statement. The
yep.
person who made that to me was extremely intelligent, person my age, and he just rattled it off coming out of his mouth. Human ingenuity will solve the problem. And he didn't know what problem had to be solved, how difficult they were. He couldn't grasp, he didn't want to grasp, that human ingenuity probably will not solve it, almost certainly will not solve a problem.
It created the problem.
I think that's part of the problem, because it's so difficult to remake all of civilization. Going back to the point I made previously, that every aspect of society has to change. How does religion work? What is the purpose of charity? Who do we give charity to? How do we allocate resources? That goes back to medical attention. Going back to artificial organs or replacement organs, who gets the heart or who gets the liver? We are now playing God. Man has
yes.
now become God, determiner of life and death. You need a heart and I need a heart. There's one heart. Who gets it? You need a liver. I need a liver. There's one liver. Who gets it? So every aspect has to change and change quickly. And it's so overwhelming, so overpowering that we tend to throw up our hands on the subject.
I mean, it's overwhelming. It's mind-boggling.
It's a very real problem. I can't think of a solution to it.
No, and I've tried for years, and, I mean, drastic action, but even if you take the drastic action, there's still, and then, okay, so we decide to take drastic action, and at the rate we're going, I mean, how many years, I mean, to activate it, how much time do you think we'd have to... In theory, if we could preserve the planet for humans, when would we have to... I mean, we'd have to start immediately, which is obvious by just looking at the different accords going on that we can't agree on anything, and we want to start everything like 30 or 40 years down the road. But, I mean, when do you think that... I mean, we'd start it now, but what am I trying to say? The whole thing's overwhelming. How much time do you think it would take if we started right now with extreme measures to try to get things under control? If we could get everyone to agree and not fight over it. Does that make any kind of sense to you?
I don't know the answer. All I can say, I go back to Chris Clarkston, a friend of mine, who's analyzed the 89 resources that permit industrialized society to function. And industrial society is necessary to feed and clothe and house our 7 billion human beings. He estimates that the major catastrophe in under 20 years to 25 years, at the latest by 2050. So even if we limited right now one child per family, I don't think we'd solve the problem. All I think we would do is reduce the number of massive deaths that would occur when there are resource wars. I don't think that will give us 100% safety. Mm-hmm. The only thing I can think of that would start us on the right path, again, I'm not not a shill for him, but if anyone of the readers want to really read his stuff, it's on the internet. It's www.wakeupamerica, spelled with a K, A-M-E-R-I-K-A, it's a C-A, www.wakeupamerica.com. He's posted, I don't know, a number of his essays on the internet, and you can go and read them for free, and you'll see the detailed analysis he's done. He's also done a book which he's trying to get published, which he used to have on the internet but doesn't have now. And you can see his really research of which cannot be attacked, showing how close we are to the precipitous edge of a rapid decline in population. And I'm sitting here in my home looking at a corkboard where I have some of the pictures of my family up. I have two blood grandchildren. I don't have more than two blood grandchildren, but my daughter's married guys, kids from prior marriages. I have four step-grandchildren and four state-grandchildren, and I'm just worried about them. I'm just sitting here scared witless looking at their pictures on the corkboard in my house, and I worry what's going to happen to them. What's going to happen to my great-granddaughter, my step-great-granddaughter? I say I limited myself only because I only have two blood grandchildren. But still, what is going to happen to her? I'm looking at her face right now. Yeah. I'm worried. As much as harsh as I sound, and I do come on harsh, and I don't deny it, I'm worried. I sit and look at them, and I'm scared out of my mind for them.
Yeah, I mean,
so I don't know what the solution is. The time is very, very short, and the politicians don't want to even look at it. The moralists don't want to look at it. I tried to get some of our greatest ethicists right now, people involved in ethics. And I sent them some of my stuff in writing and say, criticize what I have or attack what I have, and they haven't attacked it. They don't want to get involved in, again, the problem, of course, of population control. They're afraid of it.
Well, you can't attack it, because if you really start looking at it, and if you know any kind of history, you can't really argue it. And then the question is, well, what do you do about it? Which then comes to me, people can't get their mind around it and basically do nothing and wait for it to fall apart. And unfortunately, yes. I think by 2050, the planet is going to be looking really bad for humans. I can almost guarantee
Absolutely.
It. Just watching the oceans, in the time frame that I've been alive since 63, I mean, it's like you used to be able to fly over the country and you'd see dark spots. Now it's lit the whole way. You know, the highways, if you look at a map from 1943 and compare it to a map now, I mean, it's insane. You know, and it's
that's
simple
true.
Things like that. If you look at that, you have to go, holy cow, this isn't sustainable. You know, and everyone keeps using the word sustainable this, sustainable that. None of it's sustainable, you know, regardless of what you do, because the one thing that you will not address is population. You know, and I've talked to people, it's always, you know, okay, we're going to have solar. Well, yeah, but the resources to make the solar, to transform over to solar, there won't be enough resources to do it, you know. And
Let me just read you something. Let me flip a page here, and I'll read you something. Hold on, let me just flip a page. Anyway, I'll see when I flip it. But anyway, there's no such a thing as smart growth. Al Bartlett, who I referred to before, the retired professor emeritus of physics at the University of California, equated smart growth to going on the Titanic, going first class. You know, on the Titanic, you could either go first class or you could go steerage, but the result was the same. You hit an iceberg and you were dumped into the ocean. Now, smart growth is like going to first class on the Titanic, but smart growth means eventually growth will cease. You can't have continual growth, and it's the same result. Whether growth is smart or dumb or planned or not planned, you can't have growth. So anyone says, let's have smart growth, is a fool. You cannot have growth. And as Al Bartlett pointed out, it's a non sequitur. It's just oxymoronic.
Yeah, totally. I mean,
hello?
Yep, I'm still here. Yep, I'm just always being blown away here. To me, we just haven't planned for it, I guess. And it's like when you talk to Native Americans, and you're supposed to go seven generations to see and make sure that they will survive. And I mean, we're pretty much seven generations from when this nation was founded, for the most part. And I mean, and look where we've come. And the people that we slaughtered, the Native Americans who were saying this kind of stuff, were savages and not civilized. And to me, I look at it, and the civilization that we've created is a problem.
Yeah.
And again, I have to agree with you on the whole religion thing. And even if people don't practice religion, somehow in some form in your life, religion has come into your life. And for some reason, I think it gives this artificial feeling that regardless of what it happens, either human ingenuity or God is going to come down and save us or something, somehow we're going to dig out of the mess. But yet we don't want to face what the mess really is. You know, it's like with the economy. It's the same thing. You know, it's just, you know, it's all based on constant growth. And people just don't look around. And I don't see how people can't see it or at least have a concept, because I mean, I've been bringing it up for a long time and people just look at me strange, like, oh, there's no problem. And again, you're saying intelligent people, and I've talked to some really intelligent people, and they blow me away when they don't think that population is a problem at all. And it's like, whoa.
That's true. But if you were president of the United States or you were a member of Congress, and there's an unemployment here in the U.S. and you say to the unemployed millions of Americans, say the economic growth can't continue, and you have to starve to death because there'll be no jobs for you. What happens? I mean, this is the problem.
Well, that's what it's coming to. Yeah. I mean, we're there.
I think we're there.
We're there.
It's very hard to get up on a pulpit or get up in an election campaign and say to the unemployed, and I feel for them, we cannot grow, and you'll never have a job, and your children will never have a job as long as they live. What do you tell them? We can't grow. And what would they do to you? You get up on a pulpit and say, I'm bright. You can't have continual economic growth. You'll never have a job, and your children will never have a job. What happens then? This is the problem. This is why it requires a complete remake of society. It requires a complete understanding of what really is happening. It's very, very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
To do it. I feel for people. I want to solve a problem, and the solution is terrifying.
Oh, very terrifying.
What do you do?
Yeah, because I was at, it was some environmental thing, and I basically brought up population, which then this guy leans over to me and he goes, well, we should have a lottery to see who dies. And I couldn't tell if he was joking with me or messing with me, like, you know, how could you even think of such a thing? But I mean, you know, like there was a movie in the 70s, I think, called Logan's Run, where you could live to 45, have everything you wanted, and then you died. Or whatever, you lived to 30, I don't know what the, you know. And,
well,
and unfortunately, that kind of
Green
stuff. Soylent Green, yes.
With Edward G. Robbins and Charlton Heston, where they did the same thing. Logan's Run with Michael York out of England, and Soylent Green, Charlton Heston, and Edward G. Robbins. I think the last movie of Edward G. Robbins, in fact.
Yes.
Those are the things, but it's very difficult. Yet, we have to realize it, and we have to understand this, and we don't learn. There's a story, we debate whether it's accurate or not, of the scientists that analyzed the problem, of Easter Island, where people came to Easter Island, they found a great island, great food, etc., uninhabited blessing. And the population grew so fast that eventually they used up all the resources of the island and have wars between clans, and they wound up with cannibalism. And worse than cannibalism, they had no wood left on the island to cook the guy you killed, and you had to eat him raw. And we didn't learn from that. And there's a case of deer on the islands in the Aleutians where they brought deer in to feed people, and these deer overran the island. Population peaked, and it went down like a 4 deer rest on the whole island because they destroyed the niche which the deer occupied. And we have not learned from that. And you can look up Easter Island on Google, and there'll be a write-up of it. May agree or disagree with what I just said, but to give you that, or you can go to a book called Collapse, written by Jared Diamond, who was a professor at UCLA, about the collapse of civilizations. And you agree or disagree with Hero, but you get the same idea of what makes society collapse, generally destroying the environment. In this case, humanity has one environment, the entire planet. If you destroy that, our society will collapse.
Very much so. Like in the 1870s here in Vermont, the deer population was wiped out, and they had to import two breeding pairs from New York to bring the population back up. Then they had problems with, I think, porcupines, so then they decided to bring in the fisher cat to get rid of the porcupines, which then eliminated the porcupines, then which the fisher cat's population exploded. Then they had to bring in porcupines to basically bring it in. I mean, we mess with how the planet is set up. I mean, all the animals, everything has a purpose, but for some reason we think that we can live without things, like the honeybees.
Yeah.
The honeybees are dying. They're your pollinator. This is a big warning sign, but, you know, will people change? No, because they think technology, again, is going to save us, which technology is what makes the population go crazy. The technology gives you all the toys, which creates the the pollution that's going on. And don't even think about global warming. I mean, if you just think about pollution and how we create our goods and how we get from point A to point B, I mean, that alone. But then, I don't know. I mean, I do know people that figure, okay, the whole planet's going to go up in smoke. What do I care? I'm just going to have fun while I'm here. You know, there's that. And I can't really blame them for thinking that way. Yeah. I mean, I think that it's, I personally believe that it's too late, but I'm going to keep trying, I guess. And, you know, what can you do?
That's all we can do is keep trying. I agree with you. I think it's too late. All you can do is keep trying because, like I said before, I'm looking at a cork board with my great-grandchildren, and that worries me. That's all I can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's definitely a catch-22. Damned if you do, damned if you don't, and I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, I have to believe that the powers that be that run the different nations in this world have to know that this is a major, major problem and something needs to be done. And maybe they're afraid if you do the population control, people will riot in the streets and do whatever. But somehow there needs to be a massive education program started about this problem. But where do you go? How do you start it?
It's not going. Going to go back to the Congress, they're trying to outlaw an abortion.
Yes.
Not providing funds to birth clinics that even mention abortion. But let's take the Arab Spring that's just before us now. How much of the revolutions in the Arab countries that we're just reading about relate to democracy and politics, and how much relates to the inability of the governments to provide food at prices they can afford and provide jobs for them? Look at Egypt's population growing by leaps and bounds. I don't have numbers in front of me, but I can find them in a minute. Well, let's take the Israeli-Palestinian war problem. Each woman in Gaza has an average of five or seven kids. But how much of our revolutions in the Arab countries are related to politics, and how much is related to the inability of a government to provide jobs and resources? And you cannot provide jobs and resources for an ever-growing population.
No.
And their populations were growing, and something had to give, had to explode.
Mm-hmm.
This is the problem. You can't provide jobs. And going back to immigration, if we forced Mexico to not send its people here, something would give in Mexico. In fact, just that's it. You can't provide resources, jobs, food, et cetera, for an ever-growing population.
Yeah, I mean, the only solution I can think is if we actually start talking about it. I mean, I'm talking about it, you're talking about it. But it, like, really needs to be on a big scale, and people really need to start thinking, because people take so long to process something and actually realize that maybe there is a problem, you know, and but they won't talk about it. And it's never, ever mentioned, and I go to so many of these things, and they're like, oh, we can come up with green energy and blah, 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 and I'm just like, but never, ever, ever population, unless I bring it up. But now I'm actually starting to notice that people are starting to talk about it slowly, which then surprises
well,
me.
Well, very slowly, yeah.
Very slow.
Green will not work. I mean, you can so you have green energy, but if population goes in the U.S. from 310 million to 130 or 140 million.
Right.
Ridiculous. And I have in my paper, they don't have it on my fingertips, how many solar power plants we need, how many wind turbines we need, how many atomic power plants we need to replace the oil we use. The numbers are huge numbers of that. What do? We can't do it. This is a major, major problem.
Yeah. That nobody wants to address. Yeah.
Nope.
And, yeah, I don't know. To me, it's mind-boggling. The solutions are fairly simple, but the question is time, and it's basically time now. And it's just...
Time, as I said. I don't know what else to do. I'm writing. I'm trying to get my work published to cause a debate. No one wants a debate subject.
No.
No one really wants an intellectual debate. I've sent out essays I've written to many people who think of and say, please attack me, besides calling me a dirty whatever you want. Please attack the logic and math, and no one's been able to attack the logic and math.
No, they can't. You can't. You cannot attack. I mean, what you're saying is basic stuff, and if anyone looks at the picture, even if you don't know the numbers, I mean, you can't attack it. And it's again, it's the fear that you don't want to acknowledge what has to be done. You know, which is eliminate.
That is true. I don't know what to do. I'm talking on your radio station and hope that 10 of your listeners, 20 of your listeners may start something and think about it. Or 10 or 20 of your listeners will contact me, and I'll be happy to send them articles and ideas and thoughts. And maybe you get something going. That's all you can do. That is all you can do. But I don't know what else to do. I'm at a loss. As I said, since I've retired, I've tried to do what I can. There are a few of us people. There are a few people around who realize it, but very, very few. And even those that realize, very few will want to take the final step and go to coercive population control. There are many people, that believe population growth has to cease. But very, very few of them want to say, do it coercively, and they all try to make it pleasant. Let me put it this way. There are three ways only which population growth will cease. One, after, as I said, birth by war, death, and destruction. Before birth by voluntary action, or before birth by coercion. There are no other ways. And no one wants it after birth, with war, rape, murder, pillage. And everyone's gambling on voluntary action.
Por favor, marque el número que desea llamar.
Okay, we got a problem here. Shoot. Okay, so, oh boy, what are we going to do? Hold on.